the latest agriculture news from across the state and the nation, here's Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. Here's your host, Danielle Leal.
Hey, good morning, and thanks for joining us today here on AgNet West Farm City Newsday. Moving right along into today's program headlines, Brian German is talking with us about taking a biological approach to fighting grapevine trunk disease infection. We've also got a report on a study that found that genetics rather than the environment are the source of THC levels in hemp. And I'm going to go ahead and start off today's program with how water, or a lack thereof, is helping to shape some planting trends. Let's jump right in. A lack of water over the years is shaping the way producers farm. Tulare County Ag Commissioner Tom Tucker shares the recent trend he's noticed.
The one trend that comes to mind is been building over the last several years, I believe, and it has a lot to do with the water shortage that we have and the drought that we're currently in. And many of our, I mentioned row crops or our field crop producers, they're heavily dependent on water, like all agriculture is, but they're looking for a way to become more efficient. And one of those ways is to move towards permanent crops where you can apply your water through irrigation systems such as drip irrigation or fan jet irrigation, and you can deliver a very specific amount of water and or nutrients for that matter throughout the year exactly to the tree or the vine or whatever it might be and right to their root zone and not have to irrigate out in the middles or places where the roots are not specifically at. That's a trend. Not everybody's doing that, of course, but it is something that we've seen increase over the years.
Again, that was Agriculture Commissioner Tom Tucker. Now let's take a listen to these back-to-back reports with AgNet West reporter Brian German.
A recent study from Cornell University has found no link between increases in the THC content in hemp with environmental or biological stresses. Guidelines from USDA's Agricultural Marketing Service note that the threshold for THC content is 0.3%. USDA has recently raised what it considers to be a negligent crop from THC levels of 0.5% to 1%, reducing some risk for growers. Senior author of the study and professor in the horticulture section of the School of Integrative Plant Science in the College of Agriculture and Life Sciences, Larry Smart, said that their findings should help to provide some comfort regarding the CBD to THC ratio in hemp. The research project included control plots and 5 stress treatments that were applied to 3 genetically unrelated high CBD hemp cultivars. The stress treatments included flood conditions, physical wounding, exposure to a particular plant growth regulator, powdery mildew, and herbicide. Over the 4-week maturation period, tests indicated that THC content increased proportionally for all of the different stress treatments imposed on the different cultivars. The study further shows that genetics are the determining factor for THC content in hemp plants rather than environmental stresses. Further research and breeding will be needed to better determine the appropriate genetics for achieving a high CBD content with acceptable levels of THC. Researchers are taking a multi-pronged approach to managing grapevine trunk disease using various methods of biological control. Recent studies have shown that 2 different types of biological approaches can be effective in protecting pruning wounds from disease pathogens. Another avenue of research will be taking a different route for looking at the potential of biologicals in fighting infection in grapevines. Cooperative Extension Specialist and Plant Pathologist in the Department of Plant Pathology at UC Davis, Akeep Eskelin, described what the latest research project is looking at.
These grapevine trunk disease pathogens not only enter into the plant from the pruning wounds, but they can also be present as endophytic organisms within the tissue, and they stay within the tissue until everything is good. When the grapevine stress out, the fungi could turn into the pathogen. So that's one option. The second one option is that we are preventing the colonization of the pruning wounds. Well, what are we going to do when the pathogen is colonized already? So we are trying to find a naturally occurring beneficial organism within the grapevine. So plants have their own beneficial organisms, lives within the plant. Right now, to protect these grapevine trunk disease complex, we are trying to identify and isolate those beneficial organisms, grow them, and then try to give them back into the plant, kind of like give them the vaccination kind of the situation to control those grapevine trunk diseases if they have already entered or colonized or infected plants. And then we have some good candidates already. We have completed our in vitro, which is laboratory experiments. Now we are doing the greenhouse experiments, but we are almost like 70% done in that project as well.
I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
Thanks, Brian. It is time for us to head out for a short break. We'll be right back with more of the day's national headlines and local reports when we return. Don't forget, though, if you'd like to catch a recap of any of the reports mentioned in our show today, you can always head on over to our website. That's www.agnetwest.com for more information. Are you looking to increase yields up to $1,200 per acre? Well, our friends over at Phycoterra have a soil microbe food that's the glue your soil needs to improve the microbial life and provide growth to your crop and return. With the application of Phycoterra to your soil, it can increase water retention, improve nut quality, and provide longer-term viability. You can stick to growing and let Phycoterra stick to your soil. Head on over to phycoterra.com/almonds to see the difference on your orchards today. That's phycoterra.com/almonds.
Wild Eye is a proud partner of growers throughout the Valley State and Nation and provides reliable, affordable, field-proven monitoring and control solutions to help you save time and money. With increasing water scarcity, ask Wild Eye's qualified staff about their simple, easy-to-install and use monitoring systems to help you keep track of your precious water resources and also be SGMA compliant. With more than 50,000 systems working daily on farms like yours, you can count on Wild Eye. Visit them today online at mywildeye.com.
BioBest Sustainable Crop Management is the leader and most reliable supplier in biological crop protection and pollination. Since 1987, their team has dedicated themselves to bringing you sustainable alternatives for pest management. Interested in hearing more? Reach their representatives at customerservice.na@biobestgroup.com. That's customerservice.na@biobestgroup.com. And a local representative will reach out to you within 24 hours. BioBest North America, defining sustainable agriculture.
Welcome back to Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. In today's national headline, sponsored by the American Farm Bureau Federation and the National Association of Farm Broadcasters. Despite challenges from COVID-19 and bad weather, higher commodity prices and government support have finally turned the tide around on year-over-year increases in Chapter 12 bankruptcies. The American Farm Bureau looked at data from the U.S. courts from June 2020 through June 2021 and found there were 438 Chapter 12 bankruptcy filings, down 24%. The number of Chapter 12 filings over the previous 12 months is the lowest level since 2015. The decrease in bankruptcy filings is a noteworthy shift considering the significant number of bankruptcies during the previous 3 years. The Southwest U.S. saw the largest increase in the number of Chapter 12 filings by total numbers and by percentage. Filings increased in 3 of the 6 states, including Colorado, Oklahoma, and New Mexico. Filings also increased in the Northeast U.S. 4 regions of the country had better news, with double-digit drops in the number of Chapter 12 filings by total numbers and by percentages. The Southeast had 54 fewer Chapter 12 filings, a 44% drop from the prior year. The Midwest, which leads all regions with their number of filings at 235, still had 61 fewer Chapter 12 bankruptcies in the past year, down 21% from the previous year. These headlines are brought to you by NAFB and sponsored by the American Farm Bureau Federation. Now back to the show.
You're listening to Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal, tossing it right on over to Randall Wiseman with today's livestock report.
Well, in today's livestock news, the U.S. Department of Agriculture released their August cattle on feed report, and the updated numbers show cattle and calves on feed for the slaughter market in the U.S. was 11.1 million head on August 1st. That's 2% below August 1 of 2020. And according to a story from Gary Crawford, the report gives you more hints of a downturn in beef production next year and an increase in cattle prices.
The latest USDA report on cattle feedlot activity during July shows once again lower numbers compared to a year ago. Placements into feedlots during July 8% below July of last year. USDA livestock analyst Shale Shagham told us.
One reason obviously the placements are down is the fact that there is some good grass in much of the southern plains, which rather than move cattle into feedlots, some of those cattle probably are remaining on grass right now. In addition, we are looking at a proportion of cattle outside feedlots, which is below what it was a year ago.
But total placements down, leaving feedlots with just over 11 million head on August 1st, 2% below a year ago. Shagham says smaller available cattle supplies and good returns over the last few months have encouraged feedlots to bid up the price of feeders. In July, prices were about 10% higher than July a year ago. Shagham says the eventual effect of smaller cattle supplies will be a 3% downturn in beef production next year and a 4% increase in average steer prices. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
Thanks, Gary. And breaking it down just a little bit more, placements in feedlots, as we heard, in July at 1.74 million head was down 8%. During the month, placements of cattle and calves weighing less than 600 pounds were 375,000 head, 600 to 699 pounders, 255,000 head, 700 to 799 pounders, 410,000 head, 800 to 899 pounders at 424,000 head, 900 to 999 pounders were at 205,000 head, while placements of 1,000 pound and head greater animals were 70,000 head. Now, marketing's effect cattle during July at 1.9 million head was 5% below 2020. And in other news, according to the American Sheep Industry Association, planned wage increases for H2A herders in California and Colorado next year will certainly be felt by producers in the states, but they might simply be the first dominoes to fall in an economically challenging game for sheep producers throughout the West. ASI notes the most recent labor war involving sheep herders has left producers in each of those states contemplating the future of their farms and ranches. But it does appear that California lawmakers may be open to a workaround option that would keep the sheep industry alive in the state, but Colorado's wage increase and other unreasonable regulations are headed to the state's rulemaking process. Regardless, producers who use H2A herders are facing yet another challenge after major changes to the federal program in 2015 that saw a significant bump in wages mandated by the U.S. government. California has traditionally been the starting point for labor changes in the program and generally holds producers to a higher minimum wage than the federal requirements. Learn more about this on the ASI website, sheepusa.org. I'm Randall Wiseman for Agnet West.
Thanks, Randall. And in more agriculture news, cash rents continue higher in 2021. The National Agriculture Statistics Service says farmers around the nation paid an average of $141 an acre to rent cropland in 2021. That's $2 higher than last year and up by $7 compared to 5 years ago. To get the numbers, NAS surveyed roughly 250,000 farmers with $1,000 or more in agriculture sales. This crop season, the highest average cash rents for farmland are here in California, Hawaii, and Arizona. Those three states saw larger rents and year-over-year changes than many Corn Belt states. However, they also produce a lot more specialty crops, whose higher values command larger cash rents. DTN analyzed the numbers and included several states in its top 10 list of cash rents that farmers might not consider a part of the Corn Belt, but that do produce a large quantity of corn, beans, wheat, and other small grains. Iowa had the largest average cash rate for cropland at $233 an acre. Illinois is number two, while Indiana edged out Nebraska for number three. Nebraska is fourth, followed by Minnesota, which saw the highest grain and cash rents at $13 an acre. Ohio, Kentucky, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Missouri round out DTN's top 10 list of the highest cash rental rates. The National Association of Farm Broadcasters contributed to this report. And it's time for our next break of the show. We'll be right back with more of the day's agriculture news and farm features when we return. Are you looking to increase yields up to $1,200 per acre? Well, our friends over at Phycoterra have a soil microbe food that's the glue your soil needs to improve the microbial life and provide growth to your crop and return. With the application of Phycoterra to your soil, it can increase water retention, improve nut quality, and provide longer-term viability. You can stick to growing and let Phycoterra stick to your soil. Head on over to phycoterra.com/almonds to see the difference on your orchards today. That's phycoterra.com/almonds.
Wild Eye is a proud partner of growers throughout the Valley State and Nation and provides reliable, affordable, field-proven monitoring and control solutions to help you save time and money. With increasing water scarcity, ask Wild Eye's qualified staff about their simple, easy-to-install and use monitoring systems to help you keep track of your precious water resources and also be Sigma compliant. With more than 50,000 systems working daily on farms like yours, you can count on Wild Eye. Visit them today online at mywildeye.com.
BioBest Sustainable Crop Management is the leader and most reliable supplier in biological crop protection and pollination. Since 1987, their team has dedicated themselves to bringing you sustainable alternatives for pest management. Interested in hearing more? Reach their representatives at customerservice.na@biobestgroup.com. That's customerservice.na@biobestgroup.com. And a local representative will reach out to you within 24 hours. BioBest North America, defining sustainable agriculture. Welcome back to Farm City News Day by Agnet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Two of USDA's top experts, a meteorologist and an economist, discuss how the mega drought here in the western United States is affecting and will continue to affect agriculture. USDA's Stephanie Ho reports in this edition of Agriculture USA.
How big of a deal is the current drought?
We keep hearing about how this drought is a mega drought.
That was USDA's chief meteorologist, Mark Brusberg. We'll hear more from him later, but he and USDA's chief economist, Seth Meyer, recently gave an in-house presentation on how the mega drought shaping up in the West is impacting agriculture.
Current short-run market dynamics seem so inadequate to put in context of what's going on, quite honestly.
And with that, he pointed to some of the immediate market effects.
Folks are getting less irrigation water at a much higher price. Only after the last several years, it's more than doubled in price, while at the same time, their allocation has been cut. We see some dynamics in things like lower Pima cotton, because that's grown in California, less short and medium grain rice grown in California, a bad spring wheat crop and a bad durum crop because of drought.
This is Stephanie Ho, and in this week's Agriculture USA, we'll take a look at the issue of drought and agriculture. Food prices are up, and USDA chief economist Seth Meyer points to how he thinks drought factors into the picture.
I even think about drought in the moment in a general sense for food price inflation as being one of the more minor elements. I think we've had very robust domestic demand for meat and grains. I think we've had really, really robust export demand for meat and grains. And this is just yet another layer that comes on top of this.
So while he thinks drought is not the principal driver behind higher prices right now,
that may very well change. When we think about beef prices and beef price impacts going forward, Western drought, cow slaughter, those cows being slaughtered, which may be a little bit of excess cow slaughter today, is a stake in 2024, right? So there are lingering effects of this in the marketplace.
He says there also are apparent effects on future agricultural production plans.
When NASS produced its principal crop area for its June acreage report, we can see some impacts on acreage from what are already dry conditions and folks having to make some choices about what they're going to put in the ground.
As an example, he zeroes in on fruit and vegetable farmers in states like California.
Producers there are having to decide how to allocate their limited water resources. It may be sacrificing some perennial crops to save a portion of the crop. You know, maybe almond trees, I'm going to keep only the most productive or the ones for future productivity and get rid of some of the other ones. And those are things which have multiple year effects, even if we see ourselves come out of this.
Meanwhile, drought is affecting some crops.
80% of the barley being in areas which are declared drought now. We see the same for spring wheat, even more intensely, where 98% of spring wheat is in areas of drought.
Drought conditions also are leading to an increase in the number of wildfires, which is having an effect on USDA disaster relief programs like WIP Plus.
Disasters in 2020, what are the big crops that you expect? Okay, corn. Corn's a big crop, you know, 90 million acres. Beans, nearly 90 million acres. These are big crops, so there's a lot of potential for impact. But number three was grapes. And it wasn't grapes because of drought necessarily. It was grapes because of things like smoke taint.
To him, this came as somewhat of a surprise.
I normally don't expect to see grapes and eligible crop losses for grapes being really, really high on the list compared to corn, soybeans, and cotton. But indeed, when we talk about WIP plus costs going forward, and this isn't all losses, this is specifically WIP plus losses for counties that are declared a disaster area, we can see the impact of forest fires and drought on what are very high value crops in the West.
For the western part of our country, you see, going back to 2000, at least some portion of the West was in drought for at least some time. Now, you see that there are areas where obviously they had some improvements and the drought level went down, but it never really went away.
Again, that was USDA's chief meteorologist, Mark Brusberg. He points to a paper published last year in the journal Science where a team ranked the multi-decadal mega droughts in the Southwest.
Those authors, based on the information they had at hand, are indicating that this is possibly the second worst mega drought that has occurred in that region over more than 1,000 years. So that's an attention grabber right there. It's like it has been dry before, but you have to go back 500 years to see dryness to this extent and this severity.
And he adds there are exacerbating factors.
Remember, the population of the United States continues to increase in the West. So not only are those folks facing natural cycles of drought, but they're facing the impacts of warming, and they're also facing increased competition for every drop of water.
This has been Agriculture USA. I'm Stephanie Ho for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Again, that was USDA's Stephanie Ho reporting. It is time for us to head out for a short break. We'll be right back with more of the day's national headlines and local reports when we return. Don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search Farm City Newsday on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's Farm City Newsday. It's available on both Apple and Android devices. Are you looking to increase yields up to $1,200 per acre? Well, our friends over at Phycoterra have a soil microbe food that's the glue your soil needs to improve the microbial life and provide growth to your crop and return. With the application of Phycoterra to your soil, it can increase water retention, improve nut quality, and provide longer-term viability. You can stick to growing and let Phycoterra stick to your soil. Head on over to phycoterra.com/almonds to see the difference on your orchards today. That's phycoterra.com/almonds.
Wild Eye is a proud partner of growers throughout the Valley State and Nation and provides reliable, affordable, field-proven monitoring and control solutions to help you save time and money. With increasing water scarcity, ask Wild Eye's qualified staff about their simple, easy-to-install and use monitoring systems to help you keep track of your precious water resources and also be SGMA compliant. With more than 50,000 systems working daily on farms like yours, you can count on Wild Eye. Visit them today online at mywildeye.com.
BioBest Sustainable Crop Management is the leader and most reliable supplier in biological crop protection and pollination. Since 1987, their team has dedicated themselves to bringing you sustainable alternatives for pest management. Interested in hearing more? Reach their representatives at customerservice.na@biobestgroup.com. That's customerservice.na@biobestgroup.com. And a local representative will reach out to you within 24 hours. BioBest North America, defining sustainable agriculture.
Welcome back to Farm City Newsday by Agnet West. In today's national headline, sponsored by the American Farm Bureau Federation and the National Association of Farm Broadcasters. Deere & Company raised its yearly earnings forecast after quarterly profit topped Wall Street expectations, driven by strong demand for farm and construction equipment. Reuters says Deere now predicts its net fiscal 2021 income to be somewhere between $5.7 and $5.9 billion, up from the range of $5.3 and $5.7 billion forecast range in May. It's the third boost in the company's earnings forecast in 7 months. Deere, the world's biggest farm equipment manufacturer, says higher farm income that followed a recent rise in commodity prices spurred a need to replace aging equipment with new tractors and combines. Deere CEO John May says, quote, "Looking ahead, we expect demand for farm and construction equipment to continue benefiting from favorable fundamentals," unquote. The demand is booming at the same time dealer inventories are at a record low level because of COVID-disrupted supply chains.
That extends the time equipment makers need to fill orders. Big tractor manufacturers like Deere are already taking orders to get delivered in 2022. Liquid propane prices in the U.S. could be heading higher based on current supply and demand factors. A successful farming article says that could mean higher corn drying costs for farmers this fall. Looking ahead to the liquid propane market environment for grain drying in the fall, analysts are said to be using descriptions like train wreck and tug of war. The rising liquid propane prices domestically are being driven by rising global demand. The Oil Price Information Service says the prices are likely to stay high because the overseas demand is strong enough, and that can keep the overseas markets even higher. In a release, the information service says, quote, China's end users of LP can already afford to pay these high prices, so there's no reason for prices to go lower. If U.S. LP producers can make more money overseas than they can domestically, their first option will be to sell their product on the export market, unquote. LP stocks in the U.S. have also dropped recently. As of last week, the total LP stocks in the U.S. were at 66.76 million barrels, compared with 89.3 million barrels a year ago. The Energy Information Administration says that's a 35% reduction in stocks year over year. These headlines are brought to you by NAFB and sponsored by the American Farm Bureau Federation. Now back to the show.
You're listening to Farm City Newsday by Agnet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. I'm tossing it right on over to Agnet West reporter Brian German with another local report.
The National Cotton Council is working to organize educational outreach opportunities and enrollment meetings for cotton producers interested in joining the U.S. Cotton Trust Protocol. As greater attention is paid to the overall supply chain and the demand for transparency continues to increase, the U.S. Cotton Trust Protocol is setting a standard for sustainability in the cotton industry. Sam Lithgow, the client lead for the U.S. Cotton Trust Protocol at Hill & Knowlton Strategies, explains what growers can expect when joining the program.
From the grower perspective, we know the U.S. growers are, you know, it's their livelihood, it's their familyhood, often generational farms, already adopting amazing sustainable growing practices on their land. One might argue, why be part of the protocol? And the reason comes back to those couple of things. One, without all of the verification and the documentation that comes with the protocol, our U.S. cotton does risk not being part of those preferred fiber lists, and that will impact demand. Secondarily, because of all of the great growing practices in the US, actually, this isn't about asking our growers to do something different. This is asking them to simply document the practices that they are doing so that it can be aggregated with full privacy into those metrics. And thirdly, actually, what the grower will then get is some form of aggregation and comparison that could show them where they themselves could improve on their own journey towards sustainable growing. So those three reasons are why I would say, big picture, it's worth being part of. We know that time is a factor with all growers. It's hard to find that time. We're talking around 45 minutes to an hour to sign up the initial process. And so if that can be found and we have a help desk and we have people that will walk them through any questions whatsoever that they have in joining. So for all information to sign up, go to trustuscotton.org.
I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
The latest data collected from the National Agriculture Statistics Service Farm Computer and Technology Use Survey shows some trends in tech usage on the farm. Adam Peters of USDA discusses some of those results.
In general, we saw an increase of farms with internet access. In fact, no states had a decrease in internet access. We did see large gains in several states, in Tennessee, Illinois, West Virginia, Alabama. Those were our biggest increases. Most people have more than one way of connecting to the internet, and we wanted to try to show that. We did ask, how do you connect to the internet? And we allowed people to answer multiple methods of connecting. And yes, people do still use dial-up, but what we found is that, not exclusively, but in a general sense, people who were using dial-up were also using some other method of internet connection. NAS and USDA and other federal programs offer many services online, and we did ask people about that, and we did see an increase in people using the internet to reach out to the USDA and other federal agencies, including NAS, to get access to reports or forms or services.
Rounding out today's show, Senate Bill 1383 went into effect at the beginning of the year. That bill expands the coverage under the California Family Right Act from employers of 50 or more employees to employees of 5 or more employees. If you're wondering if this new expansion includes your business and if you have questions about the requirements, You should register for an upcoming virtual briefing held on August 27th at 10 a.m. Contact your local Farm Bureau office for information on how to register.
To get more information on the topics you heard today, visit AgNet West online at agnetwest.com. Get even more connected by following us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter by searching at AgNet West, and our team of Brian German at Brian German AgNet West and Danielle Leal with at D Leal AgNet West. This has been Farm City Newsday by AgNet West.